the home team.
And here we go.
All right, here we are, hour number two, the home team, presented by Golden Pantry. Eat, drink, be golden. Chris and Jeff, another couple of hours tonight as we get set to embark on this daily journey that we call the 5 at 5, which I have written out, and I have to find where it is.
That's all right. Hey, there's a lot going on.
Oh, here it is. NBA draft is the big deal.
Tonight, you got an elimination game, Gators and T-by-T.
Come on, Red Raiders.
Guns up.
Red Raiders, one of my surprise teams for 2018. I'm the anti-Phil Steele. You know, if you look at Phil Steele, his surprise teams for this year are Notre Dame, Florida State, Michigan, right. USC. One of my surprise teams is Texas Tech. Now, come on, let's be honest. If Texas Tech is actually good this season, you'll be legitimately surprised by
exactly.
that. Exactly. As opposed to if Notre Dame had a good year.
You know, it's interesting. When I was out in Las Vegas last weekend, just looking at the boards for the futures, I just, it's their business. I don't care. But I don't think you get the realistic odds like you used to because the casinos are protecting themselves.
Well, yeah. I mean, they can't have everyone going in there and betting on. Like when Harbaugh took the Michigan job, they were the most heavily bet national championship future that offseason.
Right.
And so, I mean, so they were like 10 to 1 or something.
And the
Brady Hoke era.
Yeah, they'd gone 4-8 the year before.
Right.
So
yeah.
It was just ridiculous. But when I was looking at, like, Florida State was one team that I saw. They were either 20 or 25 to 1 that I said, all right, like, there's one. If you want to throw $10 on a team, say, like, okay.
There's value.
They've got the players. You know, just 2 years ago, they won the Orange Bowl. And, you know, let's face it, if they get good quarterback play, they're probably going to have better players than everybody except for Clemson. So if they pulled that upset there, you know, they could go into the Florida game at say 10-1. There's absolute value there. But, you know, when you were looking at it, you know, Bama was basically, what, 2-1. You know, Clemson's 4-1. Like Georgia's 7-1. It's so hard to win the whole thing.
Right.
You're just not getting the bang for
right.
it. And it's kind of like, too, like we've said, the protection. That's why the golf odds have been so skewed. I mean, when Tiger Woods was like the number two favorite at the U.S. Open, it's asinine.
I mean, it's an accurate representation of your top four or five, Bama, Clemson, Ohio State, Georgia.
Right.
But you got to wait till those teams lose, which they will, with the exception probably of Alabama, who don't really – I mean, they don't get a team that I think has a shot to beat them until November, and that's Auburn.
Missouri.
Nah, come on.
Lock.
Missouri's not going to Tuscaloosa and beating them.
Barry Odom told Nick Saban he wants a piece of him.
You know what would be – did you see what Cole Beasley, the Cowboys receiver, said? I mean, if you're a Missouri fan, this probably wouldn't excite you. But, yeah, I mean, Derek Dooley was their receivers coach. Now he's the offensive coordinator at Missouri. Well, Cole Beasley said, like, oh, yeah, now we're actually learning how to run routes this year.
Oh, boy.
So.
That's just a shot.
Yeah, I mean, took a shot. Plus, Dez Bryant's not there anymore. That was the problem. I was watching that All or Nothing on Amazon Prime, and, I mean, poor Derek had to spend most of his time in those meetings, like massaging Dez Bryant's ego.
Right. And, I mean, the bottom line is in the pros, we talk about it in college all the time, you got to have your guys be guys. Well, that's everything in the pros.
I mean,
Cole Beasley can help you. He's not going to win the game for
he
you.
He put up some – well, it might be even tougher for him, too, since there isn't Dez Bryant attracting. Like, did they even replace Dez Bryant? They just got rid of him and – that's it. They got rid of them.
Because the year, remember, Chris, you and I were talking about this. I guess, was it 2 years ago they went 13-3 and they lost to Green Bay in the playoffs? But I just remember watching them, and what struck me was, well, they're giving the ball to Elliott, Bryant, or Witten on essentially every play.
And Witten retired.
Yes.
So now they have Elliott.
Right.
That's still there. And the Dak attack.
But when the Dak attack, but when they were doing that 2 years ago and they had the great year, I'm like, it's beautifully simplistic. You got three big-time weapons, and Prescott was just getting the ball in their hands.
They still have the best offensive line in the
league,
though.
They do.
That won't hurt. But, yeah, I mean, like Derek would show film of, all right, these guys have a good defense. Hey, how come you don't ever say we're good?
Well.
Okay. So, how would you like me to phrase it then?
We're really good too, but yeah, this corner's pretty
good. You gotta watch out for him, Dez. That cracked me up as much as anything. He just got mad because Derek actually had the audacity to say, like, hey, these guys actually do have a good defense. We gotta be prepared to play them this weekend.
Yeah, isn't it funny, the wide receiver position, it is, let's just keep it simple, out of 22 on offense and defense, kicker and punter, 24 guys. You're playing two or three wide receivers on most plays.
Yeah.
So that's 1/12 or 1/8 of your starting lineup. And they provide about 98% of the headaches in the NFL.
Yeah. I mean, see Julio Jones now. I mean, Julio Jones has turned into receivers, they are the most hypersensitive position.
Terrell Owens, Chad Ocho Cinco Johnson.
And they really are I've said before, they're basically they're a nice set of rims on some tires.
No question.
And
they are, when you talk about a line of scrimmage, a running back, linebackers, quarterback, that's oxygen, that's sunshine, that's photosynthesis, that's your house. Wide receivers are a nice sports car.
Yeah.
They're the last piece.
They're the add-on, yeah.
Yeah, they're the add-on.
They're you want to get the tech package?
Right.
Why not? Throw that in there.
Blocking and tackling is oxygen.
Yeah, but they do. They create the most headaches. And we got Odell Beckham.
Yes. It's blocking and tackling is oxygen. The run game, winning the turnover battle, defense, special teams, that's food, water, and shelter.
Right.
And then, you start to piece it together, and you get that house. And, yeah, then the receivers, that's your nice car.
I'm hopeful, though. Julio Jones, he hadn't been around the Falcons this offseason, but he has been working out with a Hall of Famer.
Who won't attend his own induction ceremony.
All right, 5 at 5 brought to you by Duplicating Systems. More than a system, a solution. Jeff, the NBA draft tonight, the Hawks have 4 picks. What do you do? If you're the Hawks, who do you take at 3? Do you make 3 other picks? Do you try and trade, move into the lottery? How do you handle this tonight?
All right, Chris, I think if Doncic is there, that's who I take because I think he's got the most upside.
I would take him also.
If there's a way
over Bagley, what if Bagley and Doncic are there?
Travis Schlenk's a young GM, he's very good. Bagley probably has the best non-bust potential. Maybe a little leery of Duke guys in the NBA.
I like a 6'8 Manu Ginobili.
Yes, I like the sounds of that. So I take Doncic. The only way I would package those picks is if they could slide up. Where is Sexton supposed to go, 6 or 7?
Maybe even later than that.
If they could,
maybe around 9 or 10.
If they could slide up and get him too, I would package it for him. If not, I'd lay back. And Yante Mayton would be a great pick for the Atlanta Hawks, either late first round, early second.
Well, they could 34. Yante
would
be
a great pick. I mean, I think he's ready to play. I wouldn't be surprised, Chris, if Yante, because the smart teams, the good teams, I think about teams like San Antonio who've drafted so well, or a team like Boston, I could see them grabbing Mayton because they've already got their core. And maybe, who knows how it'll turn out, maybe they don't see Mayton as a guy who will be an all-star one day, but he's absolutely a guy who could average 8 to 10 points, 7 to 10 rebounds, block a couple of shots a game. So if you're a team like Boston that's already very good, you bring this guy in to be your number 7 or number 8. I'm just telling you, it's interesting how now with the seniors – they might not have the upside, but they could be the more solid player. Different style, but I'll give you a great example. It goes back to Boston when they took Glenn Big Baby Davis. They had the firepower with Garnett and with Pierce. Big Baby didn't have the great upside. They had Ray Allen too, but he was ready to play because he had the lengthy college career at LSU. So I wouldn't be stunned with Yante, Chris, and I know we were talking about the Hawks first, if – a very good team in the late first round grabbed him because he's ready to play right now.
Yeah, I guess, he worked out, I think, for about 14 teams. Which, by the way, like you mentioned, considering that it seems like the Hawks and the Sixers have all the picks, that, I mean,
they've got 10 between
14,
them, right?
I mean, there might only be 14 of the teams even drafting tonight. But, I mean, most of the, I don't know, the mock draft projections seem to have Yonte going if he goes at all in the late second round. And, I mean, he'll sign a pro contract one way or another. But, you know, it'd be nice from the Georgia point of view to actually have a guy drafted again, because – the last was Kentavious Caldwell-Pope in 2013, who was also now the only former Bulldog that's even still active in the NBA. Damian Wilkins was for a while last year, but
he was.
I guess the Pacers ended up releasing him in early part of this year.
Yeah, we had a stretch there when Shandon Anderson was still playing and had Jarvis and Jumaine. I mean,
Damian would have been in the league.
Damian was in the league. Then I guess back in the 90s, we had Neek and Vern Fleming and Willie Anderson. Yeah. Then Shandon got in the league.
Sundi Ottagain surfaced for a couple of years.
Sure did. Sundi Otta had a very good career.
But like then you go back to, I guess it was Tompkins and Leslie were the last, were the
they
two. They got drafted in 11, right?
Did they both go to the Clippers?
Yes. And I don't think either one of them ever even got to the NBA.
If they did, it was just a cup of coffee.
Yeah. And then you had KCP.
So what do you think about that, Chris? If you could package to get up that high to, say, get Sexton, would you do that?
Even if Sexton wasn't there, I think ideally if you're the Hawks, if you end up with two lottery picks, that's the way to go. Because, I mean, right now the Hawks have one lottery pick on their roster. And just all these teams, I mean, the Golden State Warriors had Kevin Durant, Steph Curry, and Green. The Cleveland Cavaliers have – LeBron James, but you know, Kevin Love was a lottery pick.
Yeah.
Draymond
Green.
Yeah, but Klay Thompson was a lottery pick. Actually, Draymond wasn't, but Klay Thompson was.
Sean Livingston was a very
Sean
high
Livingston,
pick,
yeah. But they're just these NBA championship teams, even the ones, you go back to the Jordan Bulls, lottery picks around Jordan. It wasn't just Shaq and Kobe. The Lakers had lottery picks all around them. Even that
Lakers
weird
had number one overall picks.
Yeah, that weird Pistons team.
All those guys
like
were
three
high
of
picks.
Those starters were lottery picks.
Absolutely.
Rip Hamilton, Chauncey Billups, Rasheed Wallace.
I think Prince was a first rounder.
Prince was a first rounder. He was outside the lottery.
And then
though.
They had Big Ben Wallace was the banger. I mean,
he was like a second round guy, or maybe even undrafted.
And
but.
They even had a veteran in was it Lindsey Hunter, who was a first round pick, who was like their sixth man.
Actually, that team had Darko Milicic on it. He was a lottery pick.
I mean, here's the thing, just the NBA, you never say never, and I get it. They only have two rounds. There aren't those like Tom Brady, Terrell Davis, Johnny Unitas stories
no,
in the NBA.
But I feel like, yes, the draft is a crapshoot, but I'd prefer to take my chances and throw my dice inside the lottery. So if the Hawks can find some dance partner to package up those two other first-round picks and move back into the back end of the lottery, I think that's probably the ideal scenario for them. And then – take Yonte at 34. Do it, Hawks.
I think Chris, you're exactly right. And I'll add this caveat to what we were just talking about. I agree. I mean, for elite guys, a lotto is where it's at. But I think for teams that are really good, you know, getting that four-year college player, a guy like Yonte, who might not have the quote-unquote great upside, but who's a very good player if you've already got the pieces – maybe like, I don't know if Golden State's even got a draft pick, but say, hey, you want to come here and be the number 8 or 9 guy? Absolutely.
Yeah, I'm sure Yonte would love that. I mean, probably get a ring next year.
For Golden State, I mean, they've got all the superstars, but I mean, the Bell kid they got from Oregon, I thought was very good for them in the postseason.
And he was only a rookie.
Right. So I'm hoping the best thing for Yonte is that he winds up on a really good team.
Yeah. Well,
so I'm hoping late first.
That wouldn't be the Hawks, at least for the short term. But this is what the Hawks have to do. I mean, the Hawks are going to have a couple more lean years and have a few more drafts and get into the lottery a couple more times and see what happens, because that's how they're going to, you know, are they going to land a superstar in free agency? Not likely. They're just going to have to draft one.
Yeah, history says no. But to your point, though, if they did package those other three picks, and let's say ideally landed Sexton, let's say they got the Croatian kid, Dokic, right?
Doncic.
If they got Doncic.
Just call him 6'8 Manu.
6'8 Manu. If they got Doncic, and Sexton, you're starting on your way.
Yeah, you're heading in the right direction. Yeah,
I mean, it's kind of like what the Minnesota Timberwolves have done, because they've got Wiggins, they've got Karl Anthony Towns.
Yeah.
They've got the pieces.
They added, they got Tom Thibodeau this year in his first year as their coach. And
right.
Then, now they did make the playoffs.
They did.
Did they win a game against Houston, too?
I think they did.
I think they did win one, didn't they?
Yeah, they got a nice team.
Yeah. All right, moving on, I guess we already talked about Yonte Maton a little bit, so I'll change it up some and say for this current Georgia roster, who on it do we like as a future draft prospect? Anybody?
Nick Claxton.
Me too. He needs to beef up a little bit more, but
right. He's
I like him too.
He's built like Bosch and Durant.
Can he bench press?
Who cares?
You know, the other thing I liked about him, too, he was a freshman last year. He had a little bit of I don't want to call it a mean – it wasn't a mean streak or whatever, but he would –
He's not intimidated.
No, that's – yeah.
You know, the other thing, too, I'll tell you, just knowing Charles, we were in school at the same time, and I always liked Charles a lot. Charles is just huge.
Yes.
But was a very cerebral guy. I mean, he was just a deep-thinking guy. And just extremely mature for his age. I mean, he was like a 20-year-old. You could have, like, he could go deep in the conversation. He's a very bright guy.
Right.
And so with Nick, I remember when I met him for the first time, I just said, like, hey, I said, your dad probably wouldn't remember me, but we were in school. You know, one of my bosses used to work with him, our old SID, Norm Riley, And he's like, oh, okay, I'll mention it. And I could just tell Nick, even though he's not built like his father, he was really a chip off the old block. So I think Nick has that level of maturity as well. And I think for Charles, who was a four-year player at George, who certainly with that body, he was a draft pick. Because, in fact, remember, he and Vashawn Leonard were the first two players to get drafted, and then they returned to college when they had that rule in. That if you didn't have the agent, you could come back.
Oh.
So
they actually got drafted.
And they returned to college. Nice little trivia there. But I think Nick kind of knew what to expect, too, because his dad was a good player and he was wise beyond his years.
He was
very mature.
Feisty would be like a good word, with Nick Claxton some last year. I mean, he'd go up and he'd mix it up. And I like that, just as a freshman, too.
So I think that was probably some things what Charles was probably like, hey, I played a lot as a freshman in the league. You can't back down, even if it means you might get a technical foul. You might get a foul, but you can't let these guys push you around. So I think to have a father, and not only a father who was a fine player, but who played at your school, I just think he came in with a big edge.
All right, moving on in the 5-5 now. I mean, is the consensus, who would you draft first? Ayton, he's the guy. It's not even for the Suns. Don't even question it.
If I'm a GM trying to keep my job, that's who you take.
But you're not 100% convinced on him?
He didn't dominate in college.
He's not the guy. I do feel like with him, because the league doesn't have a lot of dominant big men, that if you do take him, then you have an edge right there because you've got something that there aren't really too many of in the NBA anymore. Big 7-footer that's just nothing but muscle.
I might be missing a couple of guys here, but to me, the last two prospects had absolutely jumped out at me that said, I love him, I think he's going to be a great player, both played for Kentucky, and that was Wall and Anthony Davis.
Yeah.
I just, since Davis, I don't know if there's been that guy that's like, oh, this guy just can't miss. He's a superstar. Obviously, there have been good players that have come out since then. I don't see any of these guys as an Anthony Davis coming in. Doesn't mean they won't turn out to be great players.
This year, you got for Kentucky, you've got Gilgeous Alexander.
Yeah.
Kevin Knox.
I thought he was a golfer.
I mean, that Kentucky team this year, what'd they get to? The round of
16, was it?
Did they make the Sweet 16?
I don't remember.
I don't remember either.
Hey, if they don't make the Final Four, it's a down year.
It is.
Big blue country.
All right, Jeff, moving on to the 5-5. The Georgia's Rose Bowl victory has been nominated for an ESPY in the category of best game from last year. Jeff, do we like the ESPYs now because of this?
I think the best game from last year was Georgia's win over Tech.
Oh, is that right?
I have to sweat that one. You know, once it was about 5 minutes in the fourth quarter and we got the ball back up 38-7, I let myself relax.
Yeah.
So
I don't count that one because I'm angry that we didn't run up the score.
So is this go?
That
this
was a
goes,
bit of a stumble for Kirby in that one.
All sports.
Yeah. In fact, the Rose Bowl's not going to win. I'll tell you what's going to win. The women's hockey team won gold at the Olympics. Beat Canada in overtime.
And that was the first time.
And the other nominee is Game 5 of the World Series.
Houston.
Which was the one, I believe that's the one where the Dodgers were up and Kershaw was pitching and Houston came back.
Okay.
I think that was, wasn't the final score of that like 11-10, went into extra innings?
They'll do the women's hockey.
The women's hockey's going to win. That's absolutely what's going to win.
With ESPN.
It's the first time in 20 years that the U.S. has won gold in women's hockey. Plus, they beat Canada, and the game went into overtime.
Right.
Although the Rose Bowl went into overtime.
Yes, it did.
Actually, so did that World Series game. It was extra innings. I'm pretty sure that's the one. Unless I'm like Roger Clemens and I'm misremembering.
Did the World Series go 6 games? Is that right?
No, it went 7.
Houston in 7?
Yeah, Game 5 went 10 innings, and the final was 13-12.
Whoa.
Yeah.
That's a long day at the yard.
And that was the one, yeah, Kershaw started. He went 4 2/3 and gave up 6 runs, but it was back and forth. Dodgers led 4-0 with Kershaw on the mound and lost 13-12.
Oh, that's right. Oh, that's right. That was a horrible loss.
Yeah.
It's coming back to me now.
Because the Dodgers scored 3 in the 9th to tie it.
Yeah.
And then they gave it up in the bottom of the 10th.
It's coming back to me now because that was one or in the third or fourth inning, whatever, with Kershaw in a 4-0 lead, their win rate had to be, you know, 90-something percent.
Here's why you're having a hard time remembering it, because the game started at 8 o'clock Eastern and lasted 5 hours and 17 minutes. So that would put it at 1:17 in the morning.
Oof.
That's why you're having a hard time remembering
and
it.
And you say 8 o'clock Eastern, probably means 8:20
Eastern. That's 5 hours and 17 minutes. It only went one extra inning, too.
Whoa.
So the game was already beyond midnight, I would imagine, even before the 10th inning, right?
Yes. Oh, gosh, yeah.
But anyway, the Rose Bowl got nominated for an ESPY, but my guess is it's not going to win. It's going to go to the U.S. women's hockey team.
And by the way, the feel of that Rose Bowl, too, and the fact that, you know, even just beyond the heartbreak, who Georgia was playing, where it was, the Rose Bowl felt like the national title game because it was Oklahoma in the Rose Bowl as opposed to Alabama in Atlanta.
Yeah.
I knew what was at stake. Everybody did. But just the feel of it, it felt like the SEC championship game.
Yeah. Well, and also that was the sense when it was over, too. But then Georgia was in that position. And obviously the Dogs did a really good job of clearing their heads. But it was like, oh, wait, we haven't won it all yet. We've already won at Notre Dame. We've beaten Auburn on a neutral field. We just beat Oklahoma.
Yeah,
we've clobbered Tennessee, Florida, and Tech. No. Now you have to beat a team that didn't even win its division.
I know. I mean, it's like we won the SEC, blew out Tech, beat Florida and Tennessee, and beat Notre Dame and Oklahoma in the same year.
Right. But that wasn't enough to win the title. We still had to beat Bama.
And none of those
games. The SEC West.
None of those games I mentioned were in Athens.
No, they weren't. Finally, Jeff, with the NBA draft tonight, this is going to be a tougher question to answer than it has been in years past. Because, you know, I mean, we love Georgia's roster now top to bottom. That's what some good recruiting will do for you.
Mm-hmm.
But if you could draft a player from another team, who would it be? Tua Tagovailoa?
No. That Alabama OLB, that Raekwon Evans.
Okay. So still we want a Bama guy?
Yeah, because of Lovis at quarterback. Lovis at running back.
I was thinking, what about a defensive back? I don't – I mean, I – because I like us at linebacker, even with what we've lost.
I do, too.
But DB, the corner opposite DeAndre Baker, could be a little shaky, right? I mean, it could end up being a true freshman.
Could be.
So what about LSU's Greedy Williams?
I love the name.
Yeah, right? He had like seven picks last year.
He's a candidate with the name right there alone, right?
Yeah. And plus, we have to play them this year, and he won't be there. We'll have him.
That'd be nice. I wouldn't mind Benny Snell either. You know, I love those tailbacks.
Oh, I know. We got a pretty good stable, though.
We do.
Yeah.
Hey, you never have enough great tailbacks.
All right, there's the 5 at 5 brought to you by Duplicating Systems. More than a system, a solution.